yet. I wouldn't walk out without doing my report and answering questions. I think we'll take it by now. You know me well enough to know that. However, I only really want to go into my personal life, but I do run a hospital and we are under pressure and we do command tonight's capacity. So that's where I'll be going to again this meeting, only not to my personal life. So I just wanted to clarify that point. So, like Colonel, I wanted to start my report by talking about a few challenges that I feel that we're facing, particularly as this report relates to to August, as far as I'm concerned. And I think, like Carol, the area that keeps me awake most nights more than anything else is our workforce. So we continue to have over 120 nursing vacancies, we continue to have doctor vacancies, and we've got a scattering of vacancies in some of our allied health professional roles as well. That's nothing new, that's something that's been noticed pretty long before I came to work on the island. I think what I am pleased about is that recently, over the last 3 months, we've started to see an increase in the amount of staff that we're attracting back to posts from a local perspective. But as you all know better than I do, we are fishing in a very small pond and it's a very competitive market that we find ourselves in. Sadly, as Carol alluded to, some of the staff that I've recruited into mental health will be leaving posts within the wider health and social care on the island. Staff that we attract back might be in the prison, they might be in other organisations on the island. We seem to recycle people around. It's extremely difficult to bring a large injection of new staff into the island. We've been looking at some more medium to long term strategies, and I know that Carl would like to hear that we started our first nurse apprenticeships back on the island. We're one of the only trusts in England that's done that, and we've done that with financial risk. That's one of the reasons why it's not attractive to other areas, because it's extremely expensive to grow your own workforce in that way. But we took the decision at board that was the right thing for us to do. And we've also we're also investing in a number of advanced practitioner type of roles. So we're looking at what the roles of our medical workforce used to be and how can we develop the wider workforce to be able to accommodate that in the future. We're also planning to do some further international nurse recruitment, and we're talking to the deanery around what areas of medical recruitment can do in order to supplement our numbers. But again, recruiting from overseas is not, it's not the only piece of recruitment jigsaw. Without a doubt, it can add, and the diversity that our international colleagues brings is always very welcome. But even today, if we press the button and said we want to bring in 50 nurses, it will probably take us a year to 18 months to be able to achieve and deliver on that. From an operational perspective, August was extremely challenging for us as an organisation. That followed a very busy quarter one, where we saw a 4.8% increase on our attendances at our emergency department. Throughout August, our bed occupancy was at 100%. Unlike factories that make widgets, it's not great to be at full 100% occupancy or utilisation all the time. We know nationally that if we work at over 85% occupancy, then we start to see it almost impossible to achieve the 4-hour access standard through the emergency department. And we also know that risks of making mistakes and errors increases as there's no downtime for any of our staff. Usually in July and August we see very high levels of attendances, but the patients that we see are usually what we call light acuity, so their health needs are not the most significant that we see in a calendar year. So we see a lot of tourists to the island during the summer, people who can't access GPs, they may decide, oh, I've had a sleep trip or a fall, I'll go into ED instead of waiting till I go home. But we're able to turn those patients around quite quickly. What we saw this July and August, particularly as a result of the expanded heat wave, was that the patients that we were seeing were more frail and they required a longer admission or a longer attendance within our services. That, in turn, had a knock-on effect on our ability to bring our elective patients in. So we were having to put some of our emergency demand, our emergency patients into some of our surgical elective beds, and that's had an effect on our waiting times. We've got a number of remedial actions in place now for our elective activity. We're running some 52 extra lists across the Saturdays between now and the year end. And we've got some increased diagnostic imaging. Anybody that's been in St. Mary's recently would have seen we've got a mobile MR scanner at the front of the hospital. So we're trying to bring in additional capacity. We're also in constant dialogue on this subject with our clinical commission group colleagues because, as you remember, we had over the winter period, we were told to concentrate on the emergency activity. Theresa May, I think, said one day on the news that she was asking all the hospitals to suspend their elective activity and concentrate on making sure the most serious deal of our communities had access to beds. We've never caught up with the winter yet, and then with the compounded tendencies that we've seen during the summer, it's left us with a shortfall on our to the target. Catching back up on that activity, not only will it depend on what happens around our staff to do that, but it will also require us to look to see if we do, and how can we do that without blowing out the water our financial control totals for both of our organisations. I want to just touch slightly as well on our diagnostics and touch back on some of what Chris said before. We saw some real problems with ultrasound early on in the year. And that's because we had a 50% sickness in that team, because it was a team of two. So when you've only got two ultrasonographers and one goes off sick, now that service would always be at high risk. One could win the lottery, one could go off sick at any time. And that's the kind of issues that we're facing. So some of our diagnostic figures fell below where we expected them to be. We've now recruited an agency person into that area, and we will catch up and predict by the end of November. Finally, I wanted to move us on into this, what I've talked about before about strategy. So colleagues will remember that when we went into quality special measures last year when I got here, we had to have a leadership capability review undertaken. And that was done by Carmel Farrer, same company that Carol alluded to earlier. It was an NHS I commissioned piece of work, so independent of the trust. Their findings, if you recall, were one of the reasons that they thought we'd gone in, we'd ended up getting into the difficulties that we had, was because we had an absence of strategy. So we didn't really know where we were going as a trust. We, every day, were firefighting, and every day we got a problem, we went to our neighbours, particularly across the Solent, and we asked them to support to prop up some of our services. We didn't have a comprehensive a document that outlined where our service at greatest risk was, and I make apologies for that because I know that you share our frustration as a trust board that we want to know contemporary information at our fingertips, not that we've got to commission a report for everything. But that was the situation that we found ourselves in. So I was permanently appointed in December and I had to appoint a whole new board. That I did during quarter one of this year, so April to June. I said we set a plan of trust board, which we John knows because he comes to me, I think, we've only this one trust board since I've been here. We said that in quarter one we'd appoint the new board. In quarter two, the new directors that were representing the clinical services, so ambulance, community, mental health and the acute, would bring to a board seminar in September their findings on fit for purposes of those areas. And they would make some suggestions to the board about the next steps. We concluded that piece of work in September, and we've now brought those four pieces four sets of information together. And we're going to, by the end of the calendar year, have created for the very first time in a long time a strategy for the Isle of Wight NHS Trust. Carol stole a bit of the thunder in relation to that piece of work as well, because we've obviously had these conversations frequently with our regulators around how are you going to be able to clearly define which services are at risk. We don't like services falling over any more than you do or any more than our regulators do. So this piece of work will give us a heat map for the first time in a very long time. And what NHSI indeed have acknowledged with us, our regulatory bodies, is that we will not be able to fix all of those problems on our partners in primary care and local authorities. So we bid for some funding to do that work collectively together. And as Carol said, Cammy and Farah have been were awarded that contract and are now supporting it. So by the end of the calendar year, I expect early next year to be able to come back to you and tell you what we found internally. And I would expect that as we move towards the end of the financial year, we're able to collectively come back to you and tell you what that strategy looks like for the wider island. But without doubt, without preempting where we get to, I tell you, I 100% believe personally that I will be sat telling you that we need to form further, stronger partnerships with our partners across the Solent. We can't be in a situation again where we've got two ultrasonographers and one goes off sick that we can't do the right level of imaging for people on the island. We need to secure a relationship with other providers that will help us have some resilience and some further critical mass. I'm really pleased that during on October the 9th we went live with our new computer aided dispatch ambulance technology that I've mentioned to some of you previously. We were the last ambulance service in the country to switch over to that technology, and it was really amazing. I live in Bryston, as many of you know, and they were able to show me right down to the shed in my back garden on the computer system where I could be accessing the phone even from. So one of the days on the island where we didn't know where an ambulance was, we could even see two of the ambulances on the ferry. It's really state-of-the-art technology. But without the support of SCAS, our partners across the Solent, we would not have been able to deliver that to the same level of specification. We are working really well with them as a partner. We've signed a memorandum of understanding, and not only the CAP, but we're working with them on the National Ambulance Resilience Standards as well. Some of you will be aware that if we were to have a biological incident on the island, we're supposed to be able to deploy multiple ambulances to that scene. When you run a service with only 4 to 8 ambulances on the road at any one time, that is just impossible. So without the support of our colleagues across in SCAS, should we get into difficulties like that, it would be nigh on impossible to afford our community the same level of response that other parts of England and the United Kingdom are able to secure. So our strategy is really important to us. Hopefully it's through this work that we'll be able to prevent situations like our iris and our ultrasound example. But that was the highlights from me, John.
Thank you very much. any questions? George?
There's no question, Mr. Chairman, but I would like to congratulate Maggie on the vacancy. I think it's very good. That's a national thing. And I know it costs a lot of money, it takes a lot of time to train these people. Yeah. And I just wish I had a golden recipe to give to you to retain the staff. There might be a little problem like that, but I think it's very good. So.
And just to say that I do attend most of the meetings, and I have noted how open and honest you are in the meetings, and how challenging some of the questions and reports are. And I think you're doing a really great job. Thank you, Steve.
Maggie, I can see why you've been Bryston for your health and well-being. It's a good place to live. My question is really about digital technology and what have you. There's been a lot of talk about there could be less travel going across from the mainland due to that. Is that working now for you there?
It's not working in our area yet because it takes a long time from thought to delivering the NHS. So one of the things I was interested in when John was giving you the update on that some of the work with the SDP is that we have secured through the SDP, I think it's 5 million rupees. I'm not going to be wrong figures, but we've secured £5 million worth of support for us with the digital solutions that we need to implement just to bring us up to the same kind of resilience as other parts of the country. So we've not yet been able to deliver some of the technology that we want to, but we're getting extremely good support from the SDP around not only funding but also capability, because we haven't got the experts within the trust who actually can lead on some of that work either, and we do need to work with our CCG and our social care partners as well.
Thank you. Jeff?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Maggie, for your report. And it's always difficult to be in a position of scrutinising our local trust, which Ireland's want to succeed so much. My question is very straightforward to you, you probably can't answer it, but given the sort of framework that you have in operating, isn't St Mary's Hospital Trust just being allowed to wither on the vine?
So I would say quite specifically, the amount of support and encouragement I am receiving from our regulators to work at pace to fix some of the problems is testament to the fact that nobody does want to see it wither on the vine. I think what my regulators and John, sadly for John, who spends quite a bit of time in my space with regulatory bodies now, I think they push us on pace because for all the right reasons, you know, now inadequate services for safety is just a big risk to our community. We do believe we're making progress in that in those areas, but we can't determine what the CQC will say, but internally our assessments are that we're making good progress. But I think there's an absolute acceptance by my regulatory bodies that we will not fix all these problems on our own, and the quicker we can get to recognising what our rest of our partners across the zone are, the better. But I certainly don't feel that I'm here and I'm on my own with it.
I'm going to come back. I just remind you, Mike, you did say that you wouldn't be able to get through this winter without assistance from providers on the mainland. That, by that is what I mean with green on the vine. That essentially the way in which you're underfunded, under-resourced, the way in which you can't get the staff that you require, etc., the cost of the framework that you work within, that essentially our NHS services are increasingly being transferred to the mainland, which is why, in my view, you are withering on the line.
Right, okay, thank you for that. Any more questions? They can't.
Should we vote to move to the next hour?
No,
we're
not.
Can't.
Just a very quick one. Thank you very much for your report. Very much appreciate that. Out of the clinical commissioning group, for the GP practice, I can't put his name out on the air, meeting recently anyway. I didn't hear a lot in the report about how you're working together with GPs, because our GPs are equally in the same dilemma that you are with staffing and so on. And I'm concerned that they're also heading towards a big crash if somebody doesn't intervene. It's supposed to be. I know that the government have intervened and that they're eager and special support.
I think that's really a CCG question, but as Carl's asked it.
If I may, I know Martin will be able to comment on some of that for you. Where I would say I was really pleased only about, I think it was 3 weeks ago, to go to an event that we held at St Mary's, which was we'd been twinning consultants from St Mary's and GPs for about 3 or 4 months now. They came together to feedback on how that had gone. And it was really, really very encouraging. So for the first time in many years, I was told, we were able to bring people back together to have conversations about clinical pathways. And it was really, spend a lot of my time in meetings, which are somewhat laborious, but it was really encouraging to see practitioners from both primary and secondary care coming together to talk about how they can work together differently in the future to overcome some of the obstacles that we're facing.
Right, thank you. I think just to round up on that, Maggie, I've had a couple of people report to me concerns they've got with the ambulance service, but I'll write to you separately on that and see what the response is. Thank you. So if you need to go, That's fine, thank you for answering the questions. Can I just say at this point about Dr. Studd, the father is leaving. I don't know whether we have another scrutiny meeting before you leave, but I'd just like to publicly thank you for the way that you've responded and dealt with concerns that I've raised and the people that have raised, and I know it's been very much appreciated, and I wouldn't want you to retire, I think it is, Barbara, isn't it, without that being noted.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I think we all agree with that, Chairman.
Thank you very much. I'm here until the 18th of January now. Maybe just keep saying it.
Just twist if you're right.
That would be it. Thank
it's
you.
Not the first time you've tried to retire, though, is it? Fine. Okay. We'll now go back to item number 7.